like notes like through, the hourglass.
These are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist and composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Yatta, Maurice, Sarah DeVacci, Jeff Parker, Leia, Whitney Johnson, Claire Rousset, David Grubbs. The list goes on and on and on. But this week, I am so excited to have Martha Sky Murphy on the show. Martha had an album that came out last year on 8093, but it's an album that really kind of grew on me. Like, I liked it when I first heard it, but then I would find myself like thinking about it days later and thinking about some part of it and then go back and listen to it. And it was kind of, it became this sort of like repeating cycle. And now it's just, I don't know. It's like we're a month out from the end of the year, and it's like, if I redid my year end article, which only came out a month ago, it would be, I mean, I didn't rank anything, but it would have been more prominent on the list. Cause it's, I don't know. As I was prepping for this episode, I listened to it a lot more, and it's just, man, it's a hell of an album. So, I was really excited when she reached out to me and was interested in being on the show, because that doesn't happen that often. And yeah. So anyway, this episode was a lot of fun. I'd say that all the time. They're all fun. That's why I do it. But this one was a lot of fun. And man, she's got some great picks on here too. So yeah. But yeah. Love that album title too, because we'll get into it in the intro. Is out now. It's been out for 6-7 months. And if you haven't heard it, please, as soon as you listen to this episode, go check it out, because it's a hell of a record. All right. Yeah. We recorded this a couple weeks ago. Great time. Hope you enjoy. My guest today is musician, an actress, a songwriter, a singer. There was something else I was going to say and I forgot it, but it's Martha Sky Murphy. Woo! So, I guess, how's it going? We kind of already talked about that, but how's everything going?
Pretty good. Life?
How's your 2025 starting?
It's starting well. I think I've kind of entered into the new year with my... with my feet running. What's that expression when you land running or something? I always get things wrong. Always. It started well. I think I find the Christmas period really weird. I don't like it. I don't like being in this limbo for so long.
Yeah. The limbo is weird. Like, I appreciate that it forces me to take a break, because I'm bad at taking breaks. But I don't. But then, yeah, I don't like that everybody else is seeing me take a break. I don't know. It just feels weird.
It does. And also the fact that other people are seemingly taking a break, but you can't see people socially in the normal way, because they're away or things aren't open. It feels like a wasted holiday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like we're all taking a break. We should be able to hang out and not without the sort of pressure of whatever.
Yeah, there's something quite lonely about the Christmas period. So it was good to when it happens. Next year, I'm going to try and go somewhere where they don't acknowledge it. I'm going to try and be away. My new year has started well, I think.
Well, good. I'm glad. Okay, here we go. That's a good Good segue. So your official debut record came out last year. Is it? God, this is going to be annoying that I keep saying that.
This is the point of the title.
Beautiful. That was going to be one of my questions, is like the significance of the title. So,
yeah, I mean, I deliberated much like I did with answering these questions over the title for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to figure out what the album was really about, you know, kind of. I had a lot of concepts going into it when I was recording, but I think when you're putting together something like a press release, the notion of grouping these songs in a sort of palatable summary forces you to think about their relationships to one another. And I'd thought hard about the sequencing of the tracks and the narrative. So with the title, I think it just came to me when I was listening to Call Me Back, which was one of the first tracks I wrote for the album, that there was something about that song that centered the record, and it is placed quite literally in the middle. Mm-hmm. So it's about hesitation, it's about the inability of language to communicate, and it's about loosely this tool of music as a language and a universal language. And it's about, I guess, what happens when you give in to not knowing. And I think the word does that. It's also something that appears in pretty much all languages.
Yeah.
And it's That's not. Great. Yeah, it's. I like saying it. I really like saying it. And I also enjoyed the difficulty that it would pose people. And yeah, whether they would understand that it was a word, or whether they would think it was two initials, or I like that kind of wordplay, and that it's a sound, that it is quite literally a sound word. Yeah,
that's great. I'm glad you mentioned the sequence. So I'm a big, like, sequencing is a thing, like, with my own work that I completely obsess over, sometimes to the point of it being a problem. But that was one of the things that I really noticed was how the album was structured, and like that sequencing. And like you said, there's this narrative, and I'm curious, and you kind of answered this, but so you're writing these songs, you're recording this music. Did you kind of have the narrative in mind as you were doing it, or did that come after, like as you were putting it together?
As I was putting it together. So some of the songs on that album they were all written at different times, sort of over the course of maybe about 5 years or 4 years. And when I was sequencing it, it was after we had got most of the recording done, and I still didn't have the title. And I think Ethan and I just sat down one day after we'd sort of finished the bulk of the recording and said, okay, well, so what order are we going to do this in? There were certain songs, like First Day was always going to go into Need, because it forms through that drone the first chord of Need.
Right.
And there were other songs on it that had relationships. So at the end of Call Me Back, there is a choir that is reversed, and that choir is from Need. So I always had this concept going into the recording of the album and what I wanted to say with the album, that I wanted the tracks to have a kind of interreferential relationship, that I wanted them to perform almost like footnotes to one another, and they would be like ghosts in a cemetery figuring out whether they got on and talking to each other, but they're from different times and eras, and maybe one of them died recently and the other one has been in there for centuries. So there was that informed a lot of the interaction between the songs and just melodies reappearing and where they could reappear to make sense.
That's an amazing image. I'm never gonna, every time I listen to this record now, I'm gonna think of like the ghosts and the symptoms. I love that so much, and that makes a lot of sense to me too. I mean
I have sort of stolen that from George Saunders, but Lincoln and the Bardo, but you know, that's okay.
If it fits, it fits.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to mention, so there's some amazing collaborators on here. Claire Rousset or Rousey. I always thought it was Rousset, and now I hear her saying Rousey. Whatever. Claire,
I think I'm saying Rousey. Rousey. Like Rose. Rousey.
Oh, that would, you know, every time I've talked to her, she's like, I don't care. She's like, it's Rousset. It's, yeah. Anyway, Claire's great. Claire's a friend of the show. Love Claire. But I actually really wanted to talk about Roy Montgomery, who is like, I first heard Roy Montgomery. It was like one of the first sort of like ambient drum guitar players. It was like him and Lauren Connors were the two first I ever heard. And this was like 25, 30 years ago. Yeah. So like Roy Montgomery is a sort of hero.
He is kind of a cult icon.
Yeah. I'm just really curious how you ended up working with him on for this.
It was just after COVID. I hadn't started properly recording the album yet, I don't think. And I had put him on a mixtape or a playlist or something and tagged him in an Instagram post. And he messaged me saying that he was really flattered to have been on the playlist and that he was a really big fan of my work, which obviously to hear from someone who you're idolizing is quite surreal. And we just entered into this email exchange, which felt intriguing given how far away he was and the different time zone he was in. And we spoke a bit about music and our practice and realized that we had quite a similar approach to writing. We both preserve the process of recording. We both use this little Tascam DP8, which makes it quite impossible to revise things or edit things. And I guess there's like an improvisational nature to our work, and there's something melancholic and naive, maybe. Like, we're both not classically trained musicians. We both come from a background in theater. Yeah, we just really got on and shared a lot of kind of common interests. And then when I started recording my album, he's very generous in his approach to collaboration. And he said, yeah, I'll just record on as much or as little as you like. And I sent him the tracks and I didn't really say too much about what I wanted. And I, you know, he came back with really beautiful guitar work, but also a recording of his 1968 Chrysler engine revving.
Oh, wow.
I loved how immediately he got what I wanted, but also without me needing to give him instruction. So that's how that's that awesome. Came about. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. For all the ills of social media, like those moments and like those possible connections are, it's like the thing that keeps makes me not completely walk away from it. You know, chance encounter with somebody across the world like that, and then it turns into this beautiful thing.
Exactly.
So the record's been out for what, 6-7 months? I don't remember exactly when it came out. It's been out for not very long, but and also feels like in the scheme of things, forever ago. What's on the slate this year? You got shows, you got
what's happening? I've just started beginning recording the second album. Awesome. So I'll be doing that, I think, for the first half of the year or the first few months. And then I'm doing a solo tour of with Squid. I'm going on tour with them as their main support, and writing, I guess. I'll probably start writing in the middle of the year. Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty good plan to me. Good year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to start recording the next record, because I wonder if it will be interesting to sort of see what process emerges.
Yeah.
Because the last record, I think it took a long time to record, and actually in reflection, it was really appropriate that it took so long, because it is all about time warping and changing and stilling. So I hope that the process for this one will also deliver some kind of conceptual meaning to whatever it is that I'm trying to say next.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it will reveal itself when it's ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't have any good segue here, so we're just going to get into the whole reason we're here, which is this list of questions that you agonized over for the last little bit.
We're in it.
And so now we're going to make the answers permanent. Not permanent, but yeah. So as always, the first question that we start with is, what is the first song that you remember?
I think that my first memory, which involves music, is watching the music video for the Spice Girls single Wannabe at my neighbor's flat. And she lived below, and I must have been 2. And I don't remember hearing the song. I just remember being really close to the TV, and it was a video, and kind of being just confused, but also quite overwhelmed with intrigue. Like, what are these 5 girls doing? And I think I like it. And then I also have this really distinctive memory of being about 3 and a half, dancing in the living room to Ruben Gonzalez and feeling really happy and kind of comforted. I have a really distinct memory of that.
I was listening to the Ruben Gonzalez record in preparation for this, and I was like, it made me want to get up and dance now.
Yeah. So.
Like, it's still got that. It's kind of a timeless record, but
it's just so joyful and authentically, happy. And maybe as a child, maybe my taste as a child was more optimistic than it is now.
You would hope. I don't know what your taste is now. I mean, I have an idea, but you know, you'd hope. Go ahead.
When I was asking my friends to answer these questions, because I've been asking pretty much everybody these questions, and whenever I've been in the pub, I've been asking people, what's the song that makes you cry? What's the song that is going through them? And after about the 10th question, they're like, I think I'm a bit bored of doing this just for your purpose now. But when I asked them, what's the first song you remember? One of my friends said, oh, it must have been something that I sang at school, which also reminded me of a song that I sang at school when I was about 10, which has the most bleak lyrics. And it's interesting that this is the song I remember the most. And the song went something like, led like a lamb to the slaughter in silence and pain. There on his back, he carried a world of violence and shame.
Oh my God.
Bleeding, dying. He's alive. He has risen. That was the chorus. And it was like an Easter song.
Yeah.
And I remember all the lyrics still. Maybe I'll do a cover of it one day.
That's pretty intense. I mean, there's so many of those, like, church especially in America, like white Protestant, or like, I mean, all those songs that are so and it's like the lyrics are very dark. It's just like, I thought you were supposed to be like uplifted and glorified by this whole experience, and you all sound like Jesus, you're just waiting for the axe to fall. But
there's something really sweet about children singing lyrics like that, though, especially yes. when it's in this monotonous drone
right.
tone. But I also remember the song that we sang at Easter was, there was another song we sang which was all about chocolate. So it's funny, we would go from singing about a baby dying crucified Jesus to chocolate eggs.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the dichotomy of Easter or something. I don't
Indeed.
Know. Okay, well, speaking of bleak songs that make you cry, what is the song that makes you cry? Maybe not bleak songs, but...
Yeah, so this one was really hard. I mean, I cry a lot when I'm writing music, and I listen to a lot of quite somber music. So to recall a kind of singular instance where I heard a song and cried was really difficult. So I, in the end, remembered an experience where I was at a gig and I had to leave because I was so overwhelmed with emotion. And it was at a Low concert, and they played Do You Know How to Waltz, which is devastating. And I mean, I've always loved Low. And I was introduced to Low at a really young age by my dad. And something about that song just destroyed me. And I did have to remove myself because it was too much to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, that song is, God, yeah. It's overwhelming, and I don't know, to me it always feels like it's like this feeling of where it's like, you know, it's like you can see like the end, or you can see this thing, and it's this like building up to, it's like, but you have to go there anyway.
Yeah.
And it's like there's this slow burn of the song, and it just builds and builds, and I can't imagine experiencing it live. I don't think I can handle it either, so.
And you know, they were such a brilliant band live. So, yeah, I mean, to behold that song performed by them was astonishing. I've seen them quite a lot as well. But, there was... I think somebody told me after the show that they weren't happy with something. And so maybe... that anger is channeled into those kinds of songs. Yeah. But also, isn't there, I've never experienced this when I've seen them, but I've heard that Alan can get quite quite angry on stage and quite animated in that anger. Maybe I benefited from that somehow.
Yeah. Well, on the flip side, what is the song that'll put you in a better mood?
Okay, so many songs. Again, how do you answer this? In the end, I just was listening to, I think I really like nostalgic 90s music that reminds me of like this sort of bygone era that I wasn't, I mean, I guess I was born in the 90s, so I was subconsciously absorbing this music, but I really love, I love Underworld, and I love Opus 3. So the song I went for was It's Gonna Be a Fine Day. And I was talking to someone else about that sort of genre of music, like Air and these inherently quite almost retro sounding bands. And we were talking about how during at the turn of the century, at the millennia, everyone was really excited about the future.
Yeah. And
you can kind of hear this futuristic hope in those songs, while it also feels like it's nodding to, I don't know, 1960s cinema or something like that.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of really great use of synths, and you've had the 80s and technology has developed. So yeah, I find it has this positive, uplifting tone.
That's a really good point. Yeah, the early turn of the millennium, 2000, 2001, things felt, there was, I don't know, it seemed like there was, things felt almost hopeful.
Yeah, it's funny to think at the turn of the century, everyone was really excited, and to think actually what's happened.
I know. The gap of how most people, I think, feel now compared to then. And yeah, God, it's what a hell of 25 years it's been.
It's quite bleak. But then when I'm sort of trying to cheer myself up, I find myself listening to quite ridiculous, silly music like Noel Coward and New York by Frank Sinatra and, I don't know, like Ethel Smith, who's an organist. Quite eccentric music. Also from like the 40s. So maybe I listen to music when I'm trying to be uplifted, I listen to music from the past, but from eras that I didn't live in.
Yeah, that would be a really, but the stuff you just listened, like, oh man, that could be a really good, like, mixtape or something.
I was thinking, when I was answering that particular question, I was thinking how much easier it was for me to answer it versus the song about crying. And then I thought maybe another question that we could add to this was, what's the best song you've seen live? Because I was thinking about how I was measuring the feelings of experiencing music actually in a live setting.
Right. Yeah.
Feedback there for you.
Yeah. Well, there is, I debuted a couple weeks ago. There is Songs of Our Lives, the remix, which is 15 Ooh. Totally different questions. So basically I was like, I don't want to just have people on once. That's boring. What if we have a really good time? And so, I think there is a question about a live song on there, but it's not that. So maybe that'll go into the third iteration that will eventually happen.
I would love to have influenced a question.
Well, in the second in the remix one, there are questions that people guess can't, like, made their own questions. And then I was like, oh, that's a really good question. I'm stealing that. So if, third iteration, what is the best song you've seen live or best live experience? I will credit you.
Thank you. You're right.
Well, everyone's favorite question is the next one. Really? No, it's not. But what is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Yeah. Impossible. Impossible until it suddenly occurred to me that I think Jesus Blood Never Failed Me by Gavin Bryars is the best song of all time, because it encapsulates just the beauty and the pain of the human experience, I think, in just such a profound way. I think it's completely timeless as a song. I think the way it frames the voice is extraordinary. I think the purity of hearing a man sing without the knowledge of being listened to or heard is, to me, sort of, it translates something that is what I'm always searching for in music, which is, I guess, innocence and honesty, maybe. It's just completely timeless, that song, and I think it's proven how timeless it is through how many iterations it's had. So I think when he originally released it, it was 25 minutes long. But since then, recently, he did a 12-hour long performance of it. And it stands. And anyone could be involved. it was a choir of volunteers, and you could turn up and either witness it or listen to it.
Wow.
Or be a part of it. And yeah, I just think, what's just so, so objectively kind of perfect about it is that it is one bar of music repeated again and again and again. And yet with every repetition, it somehow reveals itself further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have like no notes. This is such a good pick. This is such, it's an astonishing piece of music to me. Cause it's like, I would love to have witnessed like the 12 hour, like all 12 hours, because it's one of those things where you could play that bar forever until the end of time. And it would never, I don't think it would ever lose its power.
No.
And there's something about that that feels utterly impossible to me, which is why it's so powerful, because
yeah,
it's like my brain can't comprehend how that's possible. And I love that. I love it's a thing I look for. It, like music that sort of confounds me in different ways where it just kind of leaves me in awe. And this is sort of a prime example of that kind of thing.
There's also just something so romantic about the fact that this man is completely anonymous. And when Gavin Bryars has tried to find him, he never could.
Yeah.
So the fact that this man has indirectly created what I think is objectively the best of all time is also so humbling. And yeah. I find Gavin Bryars, his dedication to that man and that song very moving. And I think, yeah, that kind of collaboration is lovely. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, on a completely different tip, what's a song you used to love now? Not so much. Just about the polar opposite of where we
came. I went through a phase of arriving at parties and immediately putting Bossy on by Khalees. And while I don't think that would be the first song I would put on at a party anymore, I do definitely have a skill for clearing the dance floor. I don't seem to ever put on the songs that people want to hear. And I have had a lot of arguments with very annoying boys who think they know the best songs to put on. And yeah, I mean, it does seem like most people leave the room when I put music on at parties, but I think part of being at a party is that you do get an opportunity to listen to a song you want to dance to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that, I love that song, but yeah, I don't think I'd put it on straight away.
Yeah. I mean, most of my career has been clearing venues, so I I don't know, it's a rite of passage, but I like that. I really like that take of like, yeah, everybody should get to have their song to dance to
at
a party, and if nobody else wants to, fuck, who cares? That's fine.
And you're not gonna like every song that comes on.
No.
That's okay.
Yeah,
just give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too, is like, for me, half the fun of being a part is like, let me dance to the stuff that I maybe never have danced or would normally dance to because somebody else wants to. Like, that's community, man. Okay, well, speaking of clearing rooms, what's the song that people hate? You don't care. You love it anyway, whoever these people are, especially in this case.
Yeah, I mean, I think I also have a habit of putting music on in confined spaces, which isn't really what other people want to hear. So like if I'm in a car, I think I'm not great at reading the room. So for this question, I have answered Patriot, a single by Scott Walker, which is an absolutely incredible piece of music. And I'm forever intrigued by Scott Walker, by his career, by his methodology, the way he made music, his secrecy. But it's very challenging music to listen to. And I don't think a lot of people, if you just put this on, would want to listen to it. It kind of goes against, I think, a lot of principles for why people listen to music, which is, you know, to enjoy it harmonically or melodically or something like this. I think that song's quite a trying listen.
Yeah.
So theatrical, so melodramatic. I love that about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of my, that's always one of the things that's drawn me to his work, is that sort of, there's this like sense of grandeur to it that is, but it's shrouded in so much mystery that find it utterly captivating.
And there is something just fascinating about how enigmatic he was as a character versus how grand his music is. Mm-hmm. And how completely loud it is as a statement. Yes, Simon from the Cocteau Twins actually told me this great story about Scott Walker, because he organized an event, a sort of prom event for Scott Walker at the Royal Opera House in London. And we were talking mutually about how much we adored Scott Walker's work. And he said that because he'd done this prom, when Scott Walker died, he got an invitation to the funeral.
Oh, wow.
And at the funeral, you weren't allowed to know where Scott Walker had been buried. So he is buried in a completely nameless plot somewhere, I think maybe in Norfolk. And if my memory serves me correctly, he was playing, it was just a huge marquee in the middle of a field. And they had installed this like very serious sound system to play Angels of Ashes.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
Like, what a send off.
Wow. Yeah. That's holy shit. It feels very so appropriate. Like, that's perfect. Yeah. Like, for Scott, like, that is wow.
And the fact that he is in the ground and no one knows where.
That's, it's like knowing that. It's like, I can't imagine it any other way.
Of course.
It's like, his one final performance.
Amazing. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
No, yeah, I love Scott. Like, all time, as good as it gets.
Full-time great
reasons. Yeah. All right. Do you think of yourself as a romantic?
I am the biggest romantic. I am so romantic, it's actually quite debilitating. I have always been a romantic. I mean, when I first started having piano lessons, I got really bored because I didn't want to play the pieces for grades. I wanted to learn how to play Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered by Noel Coward. And I gave that to my piano teacher. I just wanted to sing romantic songs. Like, one of the first songs that I ever learned to sing was I'm Mad About the Boy. And my favorite film was A Room with a View and To Catch a Thief. Like, I'm a hopeless romantic. Hopeless.
Well, this must have been a fun question for you then. So what is the most romantic song?
I love this. I mean, I think that I listen to a lot of romantic music, and for me, the most romantic song ever is Martha by Tom Waits, because it is my dream man. singing a love song to me through time.
That's, yeah, wow. I didn't even, you know how ridiculous this is? I didn't even put that together. I was like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's Tom, your... I would like Tom to call me personally.
And so Tom, if you're listening.
Tom, if you're listening, my number is 077.
the song is such a gem of a song though too. Like, there's so many great lines. It's such a great, it's Tom Waits, but, and I feel like he has so many great romantic songs. I was like, when I was listening to this, like, God, I started thinking of just other ones that I've, you know.
Yeah. Well, this one was closely followed for me by I Hope That I Don't Fall in Love with You. Yeah, and then there's also Jersey. Is it called New Jersey or Jersey Girls? Jersey.
Jersey Girl. Jersey. Yeah.
It's
great. I'll Shoot the Moon is another favorite of mine. Like, yes. I'll shoot the moon out of the sky for you. Oh, what a line. What a line.
Well, he's so romantic, and he's, I mean, I feel like his lyrics are kind of, they could easily be libretto. They could be partnered with the opera.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I also, I just love that he's so romantic, but also can be quite violent in his lyrics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's a song that changed your perspective on an artist? For better or for worse?
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize that metal and a large kind of part of the movement of metal music and the genre contained some of my favorite ambient work. I think I just had dismissed that as a genre because I didn't like the screaming voices, mm-hmm. and I didn't like Metallica, and I just thought that was metal music. I thought AC/DC was metal music, and I didn't like it. Subsequently, I've realized that actually I love a lot of predominantly the ambient kind of instrumentals within metal. And so mm-hmm. La Mer by Nine Inch Nails came on one day, and I love that song. And I thought, what? Nine Inch Nails? That's not like a really lame American metal band. turns out they're not. They're great. And also, it made a lot of sense to me because one of my favorite songs as a child was Hurt, Johnny Cash's cover of the Nine Inch Nails song. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. So when I was a teenager, like Nine Inch Nails was like pretty hate machine era, like had like a whole,
yeah,
all that stuff. And that is what I always associated Nine Inch Nails, just like the really heavy, like industrial metal.
Yeah.
And so I remember hearing this and just being totally shocked that that was like Trent Reznor, and kind of in like a really good way. I was like, oh my God, he's capable of so much more than I realized. And then, cause like for a long time, I just kind of didn't pay attention to anything. And so there may have been signs of it much earlier, but I didn't care and wasn't paying attention. And so I totally can relate to that in this, like,
because it's they're quite specific. I feel the same about Linkin Park. You know, I just, it's not like Burzum or something, you know, it's
right.
It's very, to me, it's in this bracket of like corny, kind of tacky, naff American music. But then you listen to, Trent Reznor or, Linkin Park have this song that I have repeated. I mean, I've listened to so much, called Session. And I first heard it as I think it was the credits, the rolling credits of a Sopranos episode, best soundtrack. And I thought, I fucking love this. And it really spoke to that nostalgic 90s style of music we were talking about earlier that I love. And I was so shocked to see it was by Linkin Park. because that felt like an era of music and a band that I thought like 10-year-old boys I would kick in the playground, like.
That's interesting. I had somebody, a previous guest, was talking about Linkin Park and how they're due for a cultural reassessment. And
yeah, I mean, I should say I know nothing about Linkin Park apart from this one song that I like.
Yeah, I'm gonna go listen to that song. What's it called? Yeah. Session? Because I'm curious. My view of them is it's just not for me.
Yeah, so, yeah, not for me. That's polite. Not my cup of tea.
Yeah. Trent Reznor, it's still kind of surprised. Like, I was reading something in it because, so as we record this yesterday, David Lynch died.
And so sad.
I know.
It's devastating.
The like weird, I don't want to say silver lining, but it's been so really moving and beautiful seeing all the things that people have said about him. And from all swaths of, you know, life. But I saw a thing like Trent Reznor talking about when he did the soundtrack for the score for, I can't remember what it was now, but he relayed this story of, he's like, David Lynch came over to my house, like, we'd never met, and within 5 minutes he's like, okay, well, there's this chase scene and I want it to sound like snakes like coming out of a box, and it's that sound of the, like, so can you make that sound? And Trent Reznor's like, there's no footage. There's nothing for me to see. He's just, I was like, that is, I love. And then, you know, he did it. And so that just felt like this, I don't know. It's like Trent Reznor is capable of so much more. And David Lynch is, there will never be another.
So. Yeah. David Lynch. I mean, I find it comforting to know that both Scott Walker and David Lynch are now in another land, another place, another time, and that one day I will be there in that place with them.
Yeah, and they'll probably have like this whole like cache of work they've created in the interim, and it's going to be the most wild and bizarre and wonderful stuff ever. So, okay, lyrics. Are you a big lyrics person? Do you pay attention to the lyrics?
Yeah, I mean, lyrics are really important for me as a writer. I agonize over my lyrics in the same way as I agonized over these choices. I mean, I agonize over like an email, let alone the lyrics to the poem. lyrics are really important to me. I did find this question very difficult to answer because there are certain songs that I love the sentiment of the lyrics. So I really nearly chose I Want to Be Evil by Eartha Kitt because I find that song, it's so provocative. It's so funny.
Yeah.
She's nodding to the oppression of women. She's nodding to Edith Piaf and like the chanteurs. Yeah. And it really makes me laugh. There's this line that is in the theater, I want to change my seat just so I can step on everyone's feet.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's
so great. But the lyric that I decided to choose was just a lyric that stuck out to me and was the first lyric I thought of when I read this question, which is by Bill Callahan, like two motel curtains, we never really met. And it's just so good. And when you see him live, his lyrics are so funny. And he's got such a dry sense of humor, but he also has this preacher like power to his voice. So somehow these really funny lyrics become kind of like mantras that you want to live by. And actually a friend of mine gave me this book, which was called Letters to Emma Bolcutt, which is the book that Bill Callahan wrote. It's like a tiny little novella. And the premise is that a man falls in love with a woman at a party that he doesn't speak to, but he somehow acquires her address and he starts writing her these letters and she replies, but you never read her replies. And to consume Bill Callahan's mind in that way is brilliant. I highly, highly recommend that book.
Okay. The last thing I need is more books, but I'm going to totally go buy that because that sounds amazing.
Add it to your pile of books that you feel guilty you haven't read yet.
Yeah. We've all got one. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I often feel like this question could just be like, what Bill Callahan line is your favorite lyric?
Because
he comes up understandably. Yes. Understandably.
Really? Like, okay. Now that I know that, I would have chosen someone else because obviously I want to be a true original and not go for what other people have chosen. Damn.
Well, we can scratch all that and just give you the Eartha Kitt one. So that-
okay.
What cover song is better than the original?
Langley Schools Choir, Wildfire. That whole album is just beautiful and brilliant. It's such a good concept.
And yeah,
I listen to it a lot, that record.
It is, I love it so much. And this, like, I have like a weird soft spot for the original of this song just because I remember my parents playing it when I was a kid. Mm. But this version of it just is, it is so much. I don't even know. Like, I just listen to it and it just kind of like stops me, whatever I'm doing, because I have to just soak it all in.
It's perfect.
It is. And it's so, and God, it's just like so moving too. Like that, the whole concept is.
I think you can really hear how thrilled the children are to be doing this. And kind of at the same time, you can sense just the joy from the musical arranger, and I can't remember his name actually, but it's such a clever idea. And I love that it somehow has this kind of status or this, you know, people are aware of it. It's, it hasn't just gone hidden, and it is just a school singing some songs.
Right. I know. Like, when you tell explain the concept to somebody, it doesn't do it justice. It's like, no. You know, it's like, yes, it's like magic. A kid's choir to school, but it's absolute magic. So, I was so excited when you picked this because it gave me a good excuse to listen to it over and over again.
Yeah.
All right. What's the sexiest song?
The sexiest song just has to be Je t'aime non plus by Serge Gainsbourg because it is Jane Birkin coming. And the other thing I love about that song is that he also got Brigitte Bardot to do it when he was going out with her, which is very Serge. I love Serge. Yeah.
Legend. Yeah, I got no notes. It's like, this is the sexiest song, objectively.
It's the sexiest song. I was very pleased with my answer there. I think I got that right, and I don't think anyone else can answer that question anymore.
I need to retire the question now. Yeah, if tomorrow you're like, oh shit, I should answer this question, this is the one question you won't regret the answer on at all. All right, two questions left. What's the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but because of what you associated with.
Well, Patti Smith has always had a really huge impact on me from a very young age. And I used to sing Dancing Barefoot with my dad. He used to play the guitar and I would sing. And my dad has always been like kind of my biggest fan, and it can be quite embarrassing. But it's also very sweet. And he would perform this with me. Like he would probably often suggest that we perform it to people. And I think, I feel like maybe he wanted to hear it more than anybody else, but I had this absolutely incredible experience when having been such an obsessive fan of Patti Smith, when I was about 12, I went to a private view with my parents and Patti Smith was performing and nobody cared. Oh. No one was really listening. And I was right at the front. It was a really small room. And she was playing with her son Jackson on guitar and she was singing. And I was stood at the front and she started to sing Dancing Barefoot. And obviously I knew all the words. So I started to sing along, and she passed me the mic and I was so starstruck that nothing came out of my mouth. So I was singing, I was lip syncing, and I was singing, but for some reason I just couldn't, the sound wouldn't come out of my throat, which is also very interesting to me now as a vocalist, just how interconnected the psychology of singing is to the actual kind of instrument of the voice itself. Actually after that set, I took the set list, and I also took her little bottle of Evian water, which she hadn't opened, and I put it on top of the fridge, and it was on top of that fridge for about 18 years, collecting dust, something of like a relic of Patti Smith. Yeah. And I thought I couldn't open it, because if I opened it, it would unseal the air that captured that time.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you still have the set list somewhere?
Yes. I can see it right now. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. And then I saw her performing. I performed at a festival in the Netherlands called Rewire a year or so ago. And the lineup every year to that festival is insane. You know, you want to be at every concert.
Right.
And Patti Smith was performing, I think, with the Soundwalk Collective, or like it was a kind of multimedia project that she does. And there was projections of Pasolini films. And yeah, it was a lot. And I went into it thinking, well, Patti Smith always makes me cry. She has the most profound influence on me. And impact as well. But I didn't cry when she was singing. And then at the end of the set, she looked up and she paused, and then she said, "Happy Easter, everybody." And I burst into tears. I just burst into tears because I found it. I just find her kind of the manifestation of goodness and art. And I don't know why it really got to me. I'm not religious. I'm not, I don't practice any kind of particular religion, but it really moved me. And I think it's her voice. She has something in her voice, something otherworldly.
Yeah.
I would jump off a cliff if she told me to.
I don't, well, some people would probably fault you, but I wouldn't. I totally get it. people would probably be pretty upset, but hey. All right, well, oh shit, I apparently forgot to turn my phone off. Sorry about that. I don't even know if you heard that, but all right, I'll edit this out. Nobody needs to hear this.
Okay. What is your favorite ringtone?
What is your favorite ring? The new most important question. Okay, what's your favorite song? At least right now, it may change, but in this moment.
My favorite song is "I See a Darkness" by Bonnie Prince Billy, which he has gone out of his way to make quite difficult to listen to online. I have been listening to it since it was a record that my parents played, since it came out. And yeah, it has a really, really special place in my life, in my heart. He is a fantastic lyricist, and it's just a beautiful song. It's a perfect song. It's devastating. Mm-hmm. It's melancholic. It's sad. It's also kind of pure and, reassuring. I find it reassuring. I could listen to it forever.
Yeah, there's like such a vulnerability to it that just it kind of breaks me, but in like in a really good way. I don't know. It's this song that it's a reminder of what it is to be like a human.
It's very comforting somehow.
It is.
And I believe him. I believe every word. I don't think, I don't think he would ever lie to me. Yeah.
I might jump off a cliff if Will Oldham told me to. So there we go. Because Well,
gravitas.
And like I said, I think a case could be made for this being like objectively the greatest song of all time. But
yeah,
there's a lot of songs you can make the case for. And Gavin Bryars. God. Oof, that's...
Yes.
We did it. We made it through.
I'm pleased with my choices, I think. I don't feel
a
pang of regret. I feel like I stand by them.
Good. When I made this, like, was listening to the playlist after I put it together, it was just, yeah. There's great picks.
Thank you so much. Honestly, that means a lot to me. I feel like I'm a student at school and the teacher just told me that I did well.
That makes me feel a little weird. Okay, well, is out now. And if people who are listening to this haven't heard it, highly recommend it because it is a wonderful album. Excited to hear what's next. You got shows coming up, you said. Have they been announced?
I'm doing a show at the end of January in Amsterdam in a brutalist church.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And that has been announced. That's with a promoter called Subculture. And then the support with Squid is being announced, I think, next week. So probably by the time this comes out, it will be announced.
Beautiful. I'll link all that. Everything I can, I'll link it in the show notes for people. And thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Once again, thank you to Martha Sky Murphy. Her album is out now on 89.3. She's got some shows coming up and everything. Links to all that in the show notes. You will be doing yourself a favor if you listen to the album, and if she's playing near you or in your town or whatever, go see her. Listen to her picks. The playlist link is also in the show notes. And as ever, if you enjoy the show, appreciate the show, please leave a rating and or review on whatever platform you listen to this thing. It helps a lot. And you can always subscribe to the Patreon. Patreon.com/FoxyDigital. It's for as little as $3 a month. You get the episodes a little bit early. They're longer. And that ongoing support means the world and really helps keep this and Foxy D and all of it cranking along. I really appreciate everybody who supports it and does it. Man, it's the best. If it's not for you, take that $3, pick up a copy of And until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.